Even the most poised people can get into social situations where we're not quite sure just what is called for, like when we're saying hello to someone we know, but not that well, handshake or hug. And if it's a hug, what kind of hug? We can drive ourselves to distraction thinking about what's appropriate. Our guest this hour has clearly already taken that drive. Emily Flake takes up the issue of hugs in a short and funny book called That Was Awkward, The Art and Etiquette of the Awkward Hug. Emily Flake is a humor writer and cartoonist with work running regularly in The New Yorker and other publications. She created a weekly cartoon strip called Lulu 8-Ball that ran in alt weeklies for years and has written and drawn two other books. Emily Flake, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you so much for having me.
Where did the inspiration for this book come from?
So it's funny. An editor at Viking named Brian Tart had a book party, and he went to go hug his author, and it went very, very wrong. And he ended up having this real, like, dark night of the soul where he realized, you know, he just couldn't stop thinking about it. And he realized that, like, you know, this might be a relatable experience, like something that would make a good book. And I guess for better or worse, when you think awkward, you think Emily Flake. So he got in touch, and we had a meeting about it, and like they kind of gave me the general idea and let me run with it. And it ended up being like incredibly fun and really kind of taught me a lot.
That could be a whole category, though, of observing other people hugs. I remember a situation years ago where Time Magazine gave an award to a school in our area, and the teacher went up and hugged the guy from Time Magazine who looked like, what was that?
Right. I know, because, I mean, and you know, if you feel like a teacher is really used to, especially if it's like for kids, you're really used to giving hugs, and probably, yeah, the Time Magazine guy, not so much. But yeah, humans are endlessly entertaining that way.
You admit your own proclivities in the first line of the book. What is your usual stance on hugs for yourself?
I am absolutely a hugger, but I also am aware that not everybody is. I think my greatest fear with being a hugger is that people will see how, like, nakedly I want to be hugged. I feel like my neediness is just going to, like sweat through my pores, and that's not a great look.
Especially when you're in the hug. I find that regulating pressure has always been a bit of an issue for me, and when the people go, ugh, you're probably squeezing too hard.
Right. Yeah, it's entirely possible. Like, you know, unless, and you can tell kind of the difference between like a kind of leaning in grunt and a like, okay, enough grunt. You're like, you just gotta keep your ears open.
That's great. Two different kinds of grunt to be listening for there.
Uh-huh.
Emily, we have two minds about hugging as a society. It seems like we've got opposing forces going on here. One is to be warm and welcoming on one hand, but then don't take advantage of another person's body on the other.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real, like, you know, and I think that those things aren't even necessarily split into camps. I feel like, you know, one person can feel a lot of different ways about, like, the same action. I feel like as a society, we've become more comfortable with hugging. I feel like people tend to hug socially more, but there also is, like, this greater awareness of, you know, bodily autonomy and people's boundaries, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we're hugging more and enjoying it less, possibly.
Interesting. So we think we should do it more, but we also worry about it more.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of anxiety around it because we don't really have like a generally agreed upon social code surrounding hugging. You know, there's not like this is what we do in our society when we're greeting each other. So I feel like everybody's sort of at sixes and sevens in terms of exactly what we do.
Well, and in fact, I was thinking that the book is divided up into sections for relationships, family, work, and I realize there's not a lot of work hugs. We'll get to that in a bit, but that's mm-hmm. That's how the book is divided. You point out, Emily, you're not a scientist, but you do provide some science about the things we do get from hugs. There's some real physiology involved here.
Oh, absolutely. And I felt like something like that should be in there just to make me sound like I know what I'm talking about and what Wikipedia told me.
Right.
With hugging is really, you know, physical touch is really important. You know, when a mother hugs her newborn, they're both sort of flooded with oxytocin, this bonding hormone. If you're familiar with that study where they gave a monkey a cloth mother
yes.
and a wire mother.
Yes.
Yeah.
We used to talk about that a lot, you know, in high school.
Yeah, so the monkey would go and, like, you know, eat from the wire mother who was not physically pleasant to touch, but then go cuddle with the cloth mother. So it's instinctual. But with everything else instinctual, we have figured out ways to make it weird. So there you go.
Right. In fact, we used to joke about, we talk about ourselves, like, I'm not feeling well adjusted today. I must have had the wire mesh mommy. We said that a lot.
Right. That's excellent. I think I'm going to start using that.
Please do. So the word hug apparently itself comes from Old Norse. Are we talking like Vikings? We got hugging from Vikings, or at least the word?
I know, which you wouldn't think, right? You don't think of the Scandinavians as particularly huggy people, but apparently that is where the English word came from. But, you know, I mean, English borrows from everybody. So, but as far as I know, there is a word for hug in every language, but I'm sure some linguistic person is going to call in and chew me out for that. So
is it hugga or something? I mean, I know it's H-U-G-G-A.
I'm going to tell you it's pronounced hugga and tell you outright that I do not know.
All right. Well, the Vikings aren't around to ask anymore. So mm-hmm. Essentially, is your book filling a perceived gap here?
I think it's just showing that, I think it's showing a sort of societal need to talk about this experience that that everyone has had, but nobody really like talks about. One thing that I noticed when I told people what I was working on is that their eyes lit up like I was their priest, and they had something to confess. You know, it was like they could finally unburden themselves of this time that they hugged someone and like that person didn't want to hug and it was so bad. I feel like we all have these like anxiety pain points surrounding hugging. Maybe this will make things a little bit easier for people. I hope so.
Is that often the story, though, that somebody gave a hug and another person didn't seem to appreciate it much?
I think that's part of what makes it awkward, sure. Or, you know, part of it is just if there's a misunderstanding of whether this is a hug situation or a handshake situation, anything physical really anything social can be just so hard to navigate.
I should point out to our listeners, Emily, this is not a how-to book. It's not like where to place your arms. You know, do you go low? Do you go high? Do you mix them? Grasp the back of the head or not? None of that stuff is in there.
No. I am the last person to listen to in terms of like how to make things less awkward. I'm just here to commiserate. I am not here to instruct.
All right. So as I mentioned, the book is divided up into the hugs that you deliver in relationships and family and work and so on. So away we go with relationships. And really, the first hug in the book is with exes from long-term relationships?
I figure, you know, like start mean and work your way back to nice. I don't know. I feel like it's the relationship one, I really quickly realized that there were a lot of ways to have loved someone and then hated someone. So that really sort of gave me a lot of interesting minefields to kind of explore. But I like that. I have sort of an affection for that hug because it's so poignant.
Well, in a really interesting way, though. I mean, you can almost get a frostbite from looking at the picture that you drew here. It tells us a lot. There's snow around the people. There's icicles hanging from them. Those puffs of cold air like in the Arctic. And wow.
Well, you know, I mean, I feel like whether or not you've ever been married or divorced, you've definitely had someone with whom your tension carries an Arctic flavor. So I feel like this will relate.
Right, and let me, I'll read the beginning of this section. The ink is still drying on the divorce papers. The books and records are mostly split, except for that one shelf of bathroom reading stuff. And honestly, you can just keep it, Carl. So, really not people who've been getting along well at this point.
So
this is probably not the first time I'll ask this, but shouldn't some people not hug?
Oh, for sure. But I think what makes it definitely like an awkward situation is where there's a notion that, you know, you guess you have to just to keep up appearances, but that the not wanting to is just kind of like reverberate, like, you know, like just oozing out of you. But there are definitely situations in which it is not just okay not to hug, but it should be expressly forbidden. I kind of touch on that at the end of the book in terms of places you should never, ever hug.
Okay, we'll get to that in a bit. So for the people who are, it's kind of like the title of the book gets repeated as you turn the pages because you look at the first listing here about the recent ex's long-term relationship, turn the page thinking, well, that was awkward. But then you end up with hug for exes from short-term relationships. So what's the difference we're taking in here?
Oh, because just the history that you bring to a hug is completely different. If you were married and you built a life together and then, you know, things went wrong and now you have this like this fraught history, that's very different from, you know, somebody that you dated briefly and had like, you know, the beginning of a spark with, and then they just disappear. So that's like a very different flavor of rejection, and therefore a very different flavor of hug.
Right. As you put it, that dude totally ghosted you and you owe him nothing, no hug at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes the absence of a hug is the most important hug of all.
So I noticed, though, that the first four hugs described here are all exes of one kind or another. We move into married and divorced over a decade ago, used to bang in college, stuff mm-hmm. like that. So are you trying to tell us something here?
Well, you know, I mean, what is it? Is it the Tolstoy quote about, like, all happy families are the same, and, you know, unhappy families are, I'm mangling that badly, but basically, you know, a happy, nice hug is wonderful to experience, but not that much fun to write about. So it's really the ones where there's some acrimony that are the most interesting for me to explore.
We've talked to
someone. I am happily married, though, but you don't want to hear about my hugs. They're very dull.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, well, here we go with the human negativity bias again. We talked to a fair number of neuroscientists who bring up that whole issue of like, well, you know, concentrating on the things that are bad for you keeps you alive.
Right, yeah, sure. Keeps you. You'd think it would also keep you out of awkward situations, but it doesn't.
No, it really doesn't. Emily Flake is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is That Was Awkward, The Art and Etiquette of the Awkward Hug. I love the description of the flirty friend hug. Squeeze,
right.
Pat, release. This brings up the issue of what else goes with any hug. I mean, a little kiss on the cheek, more kisses on the cheek, no kiss at all. I mean, fine. Other little squeezes or pats.
I feel like that's one of the things that makes it so awkward is that there's all sorts of like directions it can go, and it's like this pact that you enter into with somebody, but you don't know like what are the riders to this pact. And when you have a flirty friend that sort of like gives these flirtatious vibes, even if you know nothing's going to happen, I feel like your body still reacts like something might, and that can become very awkward indeed.
All right, so there's a text and a subtext, and different parts of you are delivering those
independently
of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, the mechanics of some of these, too, because it's like, well, I meant to kiss the cheek, but I moved a little too far back and kissed right in the ear, and that was probably really loud, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, and not just loud, but very intimate. You know, I mean, like, a cheek kiss is one thing, but, like, if you accidentally kiss somebody, like, on the ear or the neck, that just, you really put your foot in it with that kind of thing.
Okay, now I'm having other high school memories now. It's like, wow, she got so into that kissing scene, she kissed him on the neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... I like to think it happens to everybody, not because I want everyone to suffer, but because I do not want to be alone in this suffering.
Right. Yeah, you have lots of company. I'm confident of that. So you move on finally to the bro hug. This is a big one. This is the bro mm-hmm. handshake followed by the back slap, and evidently not your favorite, we gather.
What amuses me and makes me sort of sad about the bro hug is that, like, men just have so little access to physical affection without having to sort of dress it up in this sort of aggressive, like, you know, posturing of kind of wrestling with somebody just to be able to feel something. And so I feel like we would all be better off if men didn't have to do that.
Well, and in fact, the bro hug is introduced with a little subtext here that says, I'm hugging you, but I'm hitting you. And right under
right.
that is the picture you drew of two guys in the bro handshake moving in for the hug. Each of them has a boxing glove on the left hand, though.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's like a Seinfeld episode, isn't it? The I'm hugging you, but I'm hitting you. I feel like that sort of like entered our cultural understanding of how it is that men hug. You know, it's like you can't just like somebody. There's got to be some sort of jockeying for status.
Okay, and I should point out too that to our listeners, this is not just about the things that go on within the hug and the relationships, but sometimes there is no particular relationship, and that is the point. And that mm-hmm. gets us into the category of the unearned hug. And you start with a friend of a friend, so there are standards. You're saying?
Oh, for sure. And it can be. I feel like social media has really kind of scrambled our social understandings of each other in the sense that, like, I could run into somebody that pops up in my People You May Know feed, and my brain thinks, like, oh, I know this person, and so I go to hug them and then realize that I don't know them at all. And, yeah, it can get very weird.
So I laughed out loud at the panic hug, which is the next thing in there. What happened here?
Oh, yeah. So that is from a very true story. And mind you, this was years ago. This was actually early college boyfriend. And I had broken up. And then I ran into his mom on the street, and she was very upset that we had broken up. And she started crying. And so, I mean, I hugged her because it seemed like what I should do. But then as I was hugging her, because she was so tiny, like my hand ended up on like the back of her head. And all I could think was, like, she's got a little squirrel skull. She has the skull of a little squirrel. And I was trying so hard not to laugh, Jeff. It was like, it would have been the worst possible time for me to burst into laughter. Like, what a cruel thing to do. But it's nearly impossible in a situation like that.
Well, I was laughing out loud, not just about the circumstances there with the squirrel head, but then as you unfolded a little further and got a little deeper into your own life about the very concept of inappropriate panic laughter. And I gather this has happened on many occasions in your life.
Oh, God, yeah. I had a full-on, like, I guess what you could only describe as a panic attack, like, that presented as laughter. When I was pregnant, we did this birthing class, my husband and I, and they did this exercise where you're supposed to sit, like, knee to knee and stare into each other's eyes, and I just absolutely lost it. I could not stop laughing. And the instructor kind of looked at me, like, first amused and then angered and then just alarmed and, like, just, like, sent me out to the hallway to get a drink of water. It was very embarrassing.
Oh, man. We're talking to Emily Flake here on the Jefferson Exchange, cartoonist and author for The New Yorker and other publications. Her latest book of words and pictures is called That Was Awkward, The Art and Etiquette of the Awkward Hug. There are many pictures of people hugging, attempting to hug, failing at hugging, not hugging at all. You get the picture. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Share your own story of a hug where you thought something was going to go one way and it went quite another, or you didn't think you were going to get hugged and you did and resented it, or thought you'd hug somebody else and they resented it. Please feel free to share any of these categories with us at 800-838-3760 by phone or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Don't forget, we stick with first names only. We move into the section in your book about hugging members of family. So it raises the question, is there anyone in the family we just should not hug?
Ooh, I don't think there's anybody that we shouldn't hug in our family, but I think that, like, with anything where you're close to people, you know, that history can really get in the way. So depending on how things are in your family, I think between family members, you're more likely to run into the thing where you're supposed to hug them and you don't want to. You know, if you have, like, a scary grandma, you don't always want to hug her.
True. As a kid, do we get over that, do you think, as adults? I mean, granted, you're not a social scientist. I'm leaving room for that.
Right. Not yet.
but working your way up to it.
Right. Yeah, I think we get over it just from social conditioning, you know? I mean, like, if you're tiny and you're scared to hug your grandma, it's because, you know, you don't know her that well, and old people can be kind of, like, you know, not to paint with a broad brush or anything, but old people can be kind of scary to a little kid because, like, they look different and, like, they, you know, I don't know, the candy dish is always just full of weird meringue rolls. So, you know, you don't have, like, this natural kind of, like, desire to go for it as a kid, but then you get older and you realize it's very rude not to hug grandma. So, yeah, I think you can kind of grow out of not wanting to hug a family member, but that doesn't mean you necessarily have to either.
That is true. And for that matter, we should probably define family. I know it probably happened to you, too. I got one of those, well, we're family now hugs at a wedding.
Right, yeah. Are we?
Really? I'm the bride's sister's second cousin. You know, are we really that close?
Well, I don't think any familial relationship automatically gives you, like, right of entry to anyone else's body. You know, I feel like that's, if the past few years have taught us anything, I feel like it should tell us that you never have a right to touch somebody. But I'm sure that, you know, if people are in a situation where it's like, now it feels like we have a different kind of bond, I think that it's natural to want to kind of hug that out. But again, you know, nobody should make you receive a hug that you do not want to receive.
I'm glad you brought up the last few years, because it does raise the question of whether the book ended up different from what it would have been if you'd written it before the Me Too movement, for example.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I just think there's more anxiety surrounding hugs because, you know, again, we've become sort of, like, more apt to hug casually, but at the same time, sort of more concerned about like what the implications might be or whether or not it's okay to hug people, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's just an opportunity to sort of, you know, to just ask, you know, if you're going to hug somebody, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, like, can I hug you? And, you know, don't get salty about it if somebody says no.
So this is actually a good moment for this book, it sounds like, when we're all sort of uncomfortable about the subject matter.
Yeah, I hope so. Again, not because I want you to suffer, just because I want you to buy my book.
Okay. Do you have the book in front of you? I would love to have you read like the first few sentences of Toddler Hugs.
Oh, sure.
If it's near you. And that's like in the second of the family section.
Yes.
Or third of the family section. After I should point out, this comes after Hippie Uncle. And uptight waspy relations, and then we move into Toddler Hugs. At least they don't flee from you in terror is the subheading.
Yes. So this is how we wish we could all hug, joyfully, unselfconsciously, and while taking a dump in our pants. Even if you hate kids, a hug from a toddler feels like a gift, a sticky gift, but a gift nonetheless, an endorsement from a person too young to judge you on anything but whether you're scary. It's hard to even make it awkward because two-year-olds don't have emotional baggage, or if they do, said baggage only concerns sugar. I say hard, but not impossible, because if you hug a toddler and immediately start weeping because you remember when your kid was this small, and now she's slamming doors and calling you a B-word to your face, and man, those toddler years were so tough, but what you wouldn't give for one more day where your child loved you with a pure and uncomplicated love, and yep, there you go, you did it. You made hugging a toddler super awkward. Congratulations, scary aunt.
I had forgotten that one of those sentences was so long that getting you into the third sentence would pretty much get you to the end of the section.
But. Yeah, I realized that. I was reading it. I'm like, there's no way out but through.
Right. Well, thank you so much for that, especially the part about taking a dump in your pants. It's just really brings the whole thing around. Hugs with children are really fraught at many ages, aren't they? Just in different ways.
Oh, for sure. You know, and I mean, like, I feel like people have... you know, nobody seems like, what's the word I'm looking for? Toddlers don't really have bodily autonomy because they can't really take care of themselves, you know, so it's like nobody feels necessarily weird about hugging a toddler except for, you know, the disgustingness of toddlers. So, you know, when they really kind of like get into it, you know, I feel like there is that instinct to just sort of like hug and protect and, you know, they can be very pleasant. But then they get older and they don't want you to touch them anymore. And I mean, my daughter is 7 and she's still very huggy, but I am sure there is a point in the not too distant future where she will not want to have anything to do with me. And I will have to remind myself that I don't get access to her body just because I made it.
Right, yeah, and in fact, when you get to the mother-son hug, the drawing there is of a mother pretty much kind of tackling a kid from behind, and the kid has got hands up and resenting and everything. So this is this is where the relationship heads ultimately in a lot of cases.
As I understand it, yes.
Mm-hmm. So we get your full editorial weight on the section on father-son hugs. The subhead there is Cue Cats in the Cradle. I wish I'd thought to bring the song in with us, but,
right.
But what would you like to see happen between fathers and sons that does not?
I would like to see fathers just like hug their sons as easily as they hug their daughters. You know, I feel like, you know, the reason we have the bro hug is because, you know, boys, and I think this is changing, but I think historically boys have been raised to be not hugged and to not like express affection as readily as girls do. Like, it's seen as something like feminine and weak, and I think that is a sentiment that's bad for society, honestly.
We do seem to go in fits and starts, though, don't we? I mean, I was watching the baseball game last night, and when Washington won and get to go to the World Series for the first time ever, they're all hugging each other, even the guys who clearly don't like each other very much.
Right. But are they really leaning in, or are they just kind of, you know, like doing the hefty back slap?
Yeah, basically where our ears meet and slap, slap, and okay, we're done here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Preteen cousins, now that's a cute hug.
It is a very cute hug. It's adorable when toddlers hug each other. It's like the cutest thing in the world. But then they grow up, and then it gets weird.
So the little teaser before the break about the last episode in the family chapter was about adult siblings. Somehow, Emily, you managed to convey all the baggage, and that can be considerable, and still make us laugh.
Yeah, and I felt like I wanted to really build a little world there. In I think this is really just one sentence, as to the kind of, you know, betrayal and awfulness that can happen between siblings. But then you're at some kind of function and you have to hug them.
Right, and the subtitle there is "Must We Do This?"
Right.
All right, so we move on to the section now from family to work, and mm-hmm. talk about fraught. I mean, it seems like there are now very limited circumstances for hugging at work.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, I mean, I feel like work relations in general are tricky and getting trickier. So, yeah, there's all sorts of points at which, you know, like, you know, one of the things I talk about is if this coworker acquaintance of yours is crying by the water cooler, should you hug them or should you run away? It's a very hard decision to make.
And again, you're not a social scientist yet, as you point mm-hmm. out. But I mean, what's the appropriate human response there? Not the appropriate humorist response, but.
I mean, it's tough because I feel like the workplace is kind of designed to scrub every last inch of humanity out of you. Because I'm also of a contrary nature, I almost feel like hug everybody at work, you know. But that is how people go to jail.
All right, so you can no longer shower people with kindness and get away with it.
Right. Yeah. Or if you do, maybe do it in the form of gift cards.
There's a great section here in the work section about what I imagine finance bros do at 3 a.m. Tell us.
So I feel like, and mind you, when I say this, I don't know any finance bros. So pretty much all of my all of what I think they do is just based on my own imagination. But I like to think that at some point after a long night of crunching numbers and doing cocaine, they take a quick break to weep and hug and then get back to work. Again, I could be totally off on this. Maybe somebody in finance wants to weigh in with a, "We don't hug." But yeah, I don't know. I think I just tried to humanize finance brothers, which makes me not like myself very much.
So I have to ask, though, I mean, aside from the copy itself and, mm-hmm. and the process of creating what you've created here, I mean, do people, even though you have a fairly light touch with the humor, nobody really ends up looking too bad or shouldn't mm-hmm. anyway, feel too bad. But do you still get contact from people? It's like, "Oh, that was really awful what you said or did," or et cetera.
You know, I feel like, I mean, certainly not where hugs are involved. You know, I feel like, well, personally, the ways in which I really hurt people, luckily, aren't embrace-based. But the things that I feel weirdest about and, like, you know, beat myself up in the middle of the night are certainly, like, small and seemingly insignificant social interactions, you know. And, of course, a lot of that involves hugs. But it's just anything where I just really failed to stick the landing, whether it's, you know, in conversation or giving somebody a hug. And I think there's no malice in that. It's just, you know, it's just you were clumsy and people now know that you don't know what you're doing.
Do you end up rolling your eyes at yourself as you walk away from a conversation thinking, "God, why did I say that?"
Oh, God. I mean, my default state is rolling my eyes at myself. So, yes.
There's a section here on hugging business partners from other lands. I mean, mm-hmm. and it seems like one of the bigger complications here is knowing whether there is a cheek kiss component and how elaborate it is.
Yeah, nearly impossible. My husband is Canadian, and we spend a fair amount of time in Montreal, and those are cheek kiss people, and I mess it up every single time. It doesn't matter how many times I've been told, I will always ruin it.
So did you write the Canada stuff just a little sharper because you figured you could get away with it with your husband?
with Canadians in general, really, uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, do whatever you want to these people, it reads. They're too nice to uh-huh. say anything. Tell them butt padding is a time-honored with a U, tradition in your state city men's club, and they will fall all over themselves trying to lay their paws on your bottom no matter how much it's killing them inside.
Look, it's just fun to take swipes at Canadians because they really rarely get salty about it, or they do internally, but they don't let you know about it. So as I say this, I know that there's probably a Canadian squad waiting outside to beat me to death, but, you know.
Yeah, what's their version of the CIA anyway?
Good question.
So I was glad to see you finally get to the side hug as we get to our own observations here about hugs in the world. I did not realize there was a rap video, And of course, I was watching it as a tour group came through the newsroom yesterday, and the receptionist said, "We have guests."
Again, having not heard it for a long time and then hearing it again, because like everybody was talking about that for like 5 minutes, 10 years ago, this whole Christian side hug thing. And, you know, it's the fact that they took something, because, you know, people like kind of hug side to side all the time, but they made it so weird by contrasting it against like the wrong kind of hug, which is the front to front hug. Like, there was no reason for them to like impugn the front hug in such a damning way. It's just, it's a very, very silly concept to me.
You live in Connecticut, is that right?
No, I live in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, okay. So you know, people can be a little spiky in bigger cities. You know, Ashland, where we're based, is a relatively small town of about 20,000 people and kind of a monoculture. But there's this thing that a couple of us were talking about in the newsroom where people get into, you know, alternately referred to as the Ashland hug or the co-op hug, depending on, you know, where you do it. But where people get into a hug that can last up to a minute, and they saw each other last week.
Oh, that's too long. A minute's too long. This is very interesting. I've never been to the Pacific Northwest, so I did not know about this. But now I'm going to have to research it.
Okay, got material for a second book, maybe. Any particular analysis there from people who want to hug that ardently when they just saw each other recently?
I mean, hugging is nice and everything, but I feel like even if I'm hugging a dear friend, you know, a minute feels like we're having a moment that should be kept private.
All right. Now, speaking of not keeping things private, let's take a call here from Larry in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Emily Flake, the author and artist in That Was Awkward.
Morning, Jeff and Emily. I couldn't resist telling I have many stories from my storied life, and hugging is one of my top ones, and will be one of your guys when you hear it. I was over 30 years ago, was going with a nice girl, and I lived in my trailer, and she was temporarily living in a motel outside Ashland. And we had kind of a heated argument, no violence, but a couple of things from the room were thrown, and the office was called, and I ran hightail out of there and went back to my little spot around the corner. And as I pulled into my place, I noticed two men in a suit in a white car coming down. I thought they were going to check on this, you know, possibly domestic violence. There was no hitting incident. And so I went in my place and kind of combed my hair, and I ran out. And I was so upset, I was literally crying about the fight and the incident. And I said to the one fella, "Look, before we discuss this, I'm going to need a hug." Anyway, he lets his coat open. There's a huge holster with something resembling a cross between a Magnum and a sawed-off shotgun. And he said to me something I'll never forget. He said, "We're from the FBI. We don't hug people." This is the true thing that happened. Anyway, the oddest coincidence in the world was they were not there about that incident. They were there to say that my girlfriend looked exactly like a woman named Ann Simpson who had killed 7 people in Missouri. And this is the 1980s, so they bring out on the back of their FBI white car this telex with all these dots. Supposed to be, and I said, "No, that's not my girlfriend. My girlfriend's never barely been out of Ashland, Oregon, let alone been a murderer in Missouri. Can you prove it?"
Wow.
I just go down and talk to her father on B Street. Anyway, they made me stand with the one fella for an hour while the other guy went on his intrepid journey to verify that, no, my girlfriend, who may have been guilty of throwing a lamp at me or something, was not a murderer.
Well,
we're from the FBI. We don't hug people, as he showed his gut.
Wow.
That's a great story, Larry. Truly. Oh, man. How do we follow that? And I'm guessing Larry never got the hug that day.
But before we talk about this, I'm going to need a hug. I feel like it's something I'm going to have to use in my everyday life. That's amazing.
I just wonder what the precursors are going to have to be. Do you have to show up crying to be able to say that, though?
Oh, God, I don't know. I guess I'll find out.
I guess so. Well, I wish you luck with that. I can't wait to see the next book, because clearly we're on the way to a sequel here.
Right.
All right, so we get to the group hug in the book, and why, oh God, not this?
I don't understand why we keep doing group hugs to each other. Nobody likes them. Everybody agrees that they're awful. You know, I mean, it's like open seating plans in offices. They're terrible, and yet we keep having them. So, yeah, I would like to see a national referendum on group hugs in which they become illegal.
All right. So you also mentioned that there's an aggro handshake and aggro hug. We're talking aggressive is what this is, right?
Yes, exactly.
People have points to prove with their physical contact then sometimes, don't they?
Oh, for sure. You know, I mean, like a nice firm handshake is lovely, and it's definitely, I think I'd rather have like an aggressive handshake than like the limp fish handshake. But definitely if you are squeezing too hard with your hand or your arms, you're trying to establish yourself as like a dominant force.
And then how does that differ, if at all, from the spite hug?
Because the spite hug is punching up. The spite hug is something that you give to somebody when, you know, they think they're better than you, and you're hugging them just to kind of stick it to them a little bit. Whereas the aggro hug, I think, is always a punching down hug.
And I could totally relate to the, oh, no, you didn't want that hug. You know, you hug somebody, and they're just standing there looking at you like, why did you do that?
Yeah. Oh, God. Story of my life. It's not pretty.
So Emily, a question that I don't think you address in the book is, like, what do you do when you get groups of people with multiples to hug? You know, you're like, you're seeing the whole family at the reunion. Is there a proper order? Is it just proximity? What do you think?
I think it's proximity. I would say, like, take it as a first-come, first-served situation. You know, unless you're like the bride and groom, in which case that's what a receiving line is for. But yeah, I would say just kind of like try to relax and go with the flow. Like, I don't think that there is, I don't think you have to make a hierarchy necessarily of like, oh, well, I can't hug you because I haven't hugged her yet. I mean, I don't know what your family is like, but that just seems like a lot of work.
It does indeed. I have to ask before we go about some of the places you've been. I read in an interview from 2009, I think it was, that you had some acquaintance with Shady Glen, the ice cream shop in East Manchester, Connecticut.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I grew up in Manchester, Connecticut. In fact, about like a half a mile from Shady Glen.
Wow.
Are you familiar with it?
I went to Coventry High School.
Oh, no
two
kidding.
Towns away.
Yay.
Yeah.
Nice.
In fact, I think about half of North Coventry worked at Shady Glen at one time or another and reported back that they got paid less than minimum wage and stuff like that. So I hope the ice cream's good.
Yeah, no, unsurprising. No, the ice cream is great, but I'm glad that everybody still gets to wear those little paper hats.
I couldn't believe when I looked at the pictures yesterday. It truly is like that. Yeah, I lived on the other side of Coventry, so we tended to go to the Friendlies in Willimantic and not get the Shady Glen.
Right, yeah. I mean, Friendlies is definitely like a regional force, but Shady Glen will always be closest to my heart.
Truly. So before we go, just in general terms, does good comedy for a wide audience come from moments that really ultimately induce cringes in the people who live those moments?
I think that's definitely a wellspring for comedy, for sure, because it. I think in the basic sense of it, comedy, laughter is like a release from tension. So if you can locate tension points and then, you know, subvert them or undercut them or make people laugh at them, I think that resonates with people, pretty easily.
So what, are you working on something else in book form now?
Not necessarily in book form. You know, just we'll see. We'll see. Talk to me next week.
Okay, fair enough. We've had enough fun this time. The book is called That Was Awkward, The Art and Etiquette of the Awkward Hug. It's by Emily Flake, both words and pictures, and I'll never look at your New Yorker cartoons the same way again. Thanks so much for coming onto the program today.
Thank you so much.